Ooh, it's getting a little sensual with the mic. So, before the start of our Rage Quit episode, I would like to tell a little bit about Rage Quit's sponsor. So, welcome to another episode of Rage Quit, the husband and wife duo that discusses video games every week. Rage Quit is sponsored by AFK Clothing Co. Are you a gamer? Do you enjoy games? Then check out AFK Clothing Co. for all of your gaming apparel needs. As I record this, I am sporting an AFK green sleeve baseball tee that I absolutely love and wear every week. We'd never be sponsored by something we didn't like. And if you'd like to support the show, head on over to AFK Clothing Co., link in the description below, and type ASI in the promo code box to get 10% off your next order. As always, just follow the bear, and now on to the show.
Bear! Whoa.
That was like audio wavelength aggressive.
It was a saved. It's been brewing.
Your bit 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 bands are like farts.
I did have beans today. I mean,
one way or the other, it could be a bam 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 or a gas chamber.
What'd you do? As our toddler so fondly says.
At least you picked up on it.
Oh, he doesn't do it for real fart though.
He did that one time.
Yeah, but it was like.
But I don't think he knew.
No, it like
sure. It just sounded
vibrated
like
on the couch and sounded like a and not an actual toot. And but every time you actually fart, he doesn't get it.
He doesn't do it. Yeah.
It's still funny though.
It is funny. I mean, he'll get it eventually. The foundation's been set.
I don't know if it's a great foundation to teach your toddler, but
it's still a foundation.
Farts are funny, so
farts are always funny. Like in any context at any age,
the farts are funny. It's yeah. Like the one person, the
little
sins.
Kid farts, or say, you know, here's a raspberry and says, "What'd you do?" Or the 80-year-old grandma toots and she's pulling bread out of the oven. Equally fucking hilarious, doesn't it?
Though to be fair, toddler farts are horrible smelling.
It's same with 80-year-old grandmother. So see, it kind of evens out. That's
dude,
the
remember
spectrum.
That one time you gassed the beans, or you whatever you soaked them.
Oh yeah, I suppose degas the beans.
That's not you're just soaking them to soften them. That's you can't degas the beans.
You degas them.
It made it worse.
That's all the little bubbles that are on top. That's why you do that.
It made it worse.
Somehow it did. Yeah, it was a lot of beans though. I think that was really what it was. It was more volume, so it's like, hey, they lost 20% of their gas, but you're eating four times as many beans. It's kind of like, yeah.
Oh my god!
I think that's what happened.
We had to open up the windows. That was a bad night. Oh god.
Even dogs. Were like, whoa.
I think we had one of you or I farted, and like Kratos jumped down. Like, really?
Or got out from underneath the covers.
Oh, no, it's underneath the covers. That's right. I'm like, really doxing my fart.
Oh, my God.
That's how
you know it's good.
It's a free-range fart, though, so, you know, it's not like it's covered. There's a sleeping pit of DeLorean down below.
She's the worst. Yeah, she was. Thank God she was facing the other way, but the other night, I was playing games and talking to John on Discord, and Leia was laying next to me on the couch. So I'm on the long portion with my legs up and stuff. I got my drinks, my headset, my iPad, my controller. I'm going to town. And Leia was being super cuddly. She was laying her head down on my lap. Well, Trish and Dante or Chiweenies were in a small dog pile close to her butt. And she just lets one go. And John was like, what was that? He heard it over the mic. And the Chiweenies were like startled awake and scared. They ran underneath the couch because it was so loud. Pedro didn't even wake up.
Of course not.
It was great though.
You showed John a fart, dog fart.
I did, yeah.
What did he say?
He's like, oh, Sierra just did that like 10 minutes ago. He's like, you just couldn't hear it.
Oh my god.
It was the best.
Oh, well, we digress. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Reach Queen!
Woohoo! I'm Anthony Schultz.
Aw.
Oh.
I'm Aeros because it looks whatever.
I'm Anthony Schultz.
I was going to say this is episode 30 because it's a cool dirty 30, but whatever.
It is episode 30. We made it. We're done, guys.
We're done.
That was it. That was
oh, yeah, there's a giant moth in here. It's up above your head.
It's the light.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I actually like it.
What, the moth or?
Yeah, moth.
Oh, okay. I don't like the spiders. The spiders have been an issue. We have vacated their entire collective home.
When I was cleaning on the other side of the studio today, there was like huge white ones.
Ooh.
Like, oh my god, fuck! I was killing those guys left and right, but
Well, that's why we got chickens. They're going to eat them.
Yeah, and all that brush is going to be cleaned out, so.
Well, yeah, to be fair, I mean, yeah, we are revamping the outside because the chickens are going to be behind the studio, and then
the other side is going to be storage for, like,
lawnmower and stuff like that. Yeah. So you probably want to kill all the spiders over there because the chickies aren't going to be over there. For granted, they'll be eating the bugs.
They're not. And I wouldn't be opposed to, like, spraying down that area and stuff either.
Yeah, definitely not chemicals where the chickens are going to go.
But. No, but there'll be a fence there.
Yeah.
So I will go on the other side where they are.
All right, kind sir, what is today's episode?
So a few episodes ago, we talked about how we would do some reviews or, like, spoiler casts in three-part episodes. Mm-hmm. We would do, like, a first impressions, which would be a part one, a part two as we
play a little bit more.
Yeah, like, finish the game, and then we would do, like, a post-mortem after everything was out, and maybe, like, all DLC and, like, patches mm-hmm. have been played.
Yeah.
That was in, like, specific reference to Doom Eternal and Animal Crossing.
Yeah, which I'm still chugging along Animal Crossing, by the way.
Yeah, and I haven't done absolutely everything in Doom yet, mm-hmm. and there is DLC still coming out.
Yeah.
But Assassin's Creed Odyssey,
which we've talked about Assassin's Creed quite a bit.
We have, yes. And we've also talked about it on FCG as well. Mm-hmm. It's completely done.
Yep.
All the patches are out. All the DLC is out. Yep. And I have finished absolutely everything.
Oh, dear God. Yep.
Yeah, did the platinum.
Did more than he needed.
Of course. And then did all the DLC and completed that as well. And then Odyssey in particular it was a free update. But it had another trophy set called Tales of Greece. Mm-hmm. And they were like all these little side stories, like personal side stories.
Mom's knocking off those here, my soda. What the fuck?
Alexios or Cassandra, depending on who you pick.
Stupid Mothra. I'm just going to say right now, I hate that battle between Alexios and Cassandra. It's like honestly the most annoying thing because regardless, it's a good story.
Yeah, it's got some issues, but I think it's a decent one.
Well, I mean,
I agree with that.
What game doesn't have issues?
No, that's why I'm saying I agree.
No, yeah, and it's just like, the big thing is, I don't know how much cemented this is in this argument, I know we've talked about this quite often, is that the story was essentially written for you to play as Cassandra, not as Alexios, which is weird.
That's kind of like the...
I'm getting the gist of it yeah. from some of the articles that we've read or you've gone over. And
I actually have one up here that kind of references that. So this is via usgamer.net. So the title of this article is 2/3 of Assassin's Creed Odyssey players chose the wrong protagonist. News by Matt Kim, news editor for US Gamer.
That's a raspberry, I promise.
So
what'd you do?
Where is the little blurb here? So in the most recent issue of Game Informer, Phillips, that is director Scott Phillips mm-hmm. of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, expressed surprise that more players chose Alexios than Cassandra, given that during playtesting the choices were more evenly split. The interesting thing is during playtest it was pretty much 50-50, and in fact developers expected Cassandra to be chosen more after initial testing. The idea of choice being key to our game shows really well, and that even we were surprised some of the choice players ended up making. That tells me that it was written for Cassandra.
Well, yeah, I'm obviously, we're taking this off of out of context, you know, the little blurb that they said, obviously, even the person who created it, it's like...
I think that's PR speak. I think you read between the lines there, and it's like, we wanted people to... pick Cassandra.
They're not going to outright say it so they don't lambast people who have picked Alexios and made it seem like...
Well, because it's pretty much like you're stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
You're stupid if you pick Alexios. Is how that would come across if there wasn't kind of that PR double speak there.
Yeah. And the problem is, and we've talked about this before as well, this was essentially on this podcast, whatever, that if you're going to make a female strong game, a female head character, don't do the split thing and then assume people are just going to pick the female character because of times or whatever the situation is.
Yeah, it seems a little weird. And in my opinion, it does a disservice to the writing. So, like, the goal is to give player agency or player mm-hmm. choice mm-hmm. In almost all aspects mm-hmm. of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I think that's a worthy goal because it really does expand on a lot of the RPG elements that Origins introduced. Mm-hmm. So I definitely see where they're going.
Yeah.
And they've been pretty boisterous about that. You know, that was the one of the main goals as far as like feature implementation. So that obviously then affects the character you can play as, because you can pick Alexios or Cassandra, and then they essentially just swap roles in the narrative. One becomes kind of the pseudo villain, depending on who you pick, and then one is the protagonist that you play as.
Which I know we're, I'm going to spoil this even earlier for granted. The game's been out for a while.
2 years, 2018, almost 2 years.
That there's what, 16 different endings?
It's
essentially
there's a lot. I don't know if there's like 16. There is something along the lines of like 7 or 9 or something like that.
So. Well, I got 16 stuck in my head. Whatever.
But yeah, essentially the main plot, depending on whether you pick Alexios or Cassandra, doesn't matter in this regards. But it's a family plot, like line that kind of courses
the main story,
Odyssey.
At least.
Yeah, this Sans DLC, and it's essentially like reforming the old family as it was in the beginning, when everybody kind of gets like separated, because of a very traumatic event that happens in the beginning. So. And the endings then determine, like, pretty much how many family members you've saved. So, yeah, you can have, like, a combination thereof.
Yeah.
So, it's, the ending I got is not, like, the best ending.
It's one of the best.
The best ending is if you reunite the entire family.
But
is kind
fair,
of the goal.
I wouldn't want
which is probably the true ending.
Yeah, but to be fair, and I'm going to interject here, I wouldn't want the Spartan father or stepfather at all. Like, I
which is how mine ended up, so I consider it to be a good ending. Because I ended up saving a sibling that becomes the villain, Deimos, and the mother.
Which is fair. No, I like that.
And
type
I did
of
not,
ending.
I killed the, I outright killed the stepfather.
Yeah.
Which
then
happens very, very early in the game, so I didn't realize how much that would reverberate. I thought the narrative would twist a little bit and focus more on the cult of Cosmos. And the war between the Athenians
and the
Spartans.
It's really, really weird.
So I didn't think that was as... I knew it was important, but I thought that was just kind of like the opening salvo. Like, here's the emotional
here's to get you
argument
started.
To get started. You can decide whether to kill him or not. I killed him.
Yeah, I would have too.
And then...
threw your ass off the cliff!
Yeah, exactly. And...
that's Spartan law.
Dropped a baby off a cliff, and then then shoved you off, or you got knocked off, like, in the beginning, all because of him. And then you got promoted after the fact, nonetheless. So I killed him, the wolf of Sparta, I killed, and then that kind of, you can't really then get the stepbrother.
No.
Because later on, after that event, the Wolf of Sparta adopts another son and raises him as his own. And his name is Stentor. And, like, if you kill the Wolf of Sparta, usually Stentor, and, like, most other people's playthrough, dies. My version, he didn't die. I did not kill him.
Nope.
You get another point about three quarters of the way through the game where you have to go and help him.
Look at all that. Look like a spider, like, dropped down.
I saw something.
Dude, don't do that.
Where, like, you have to go help Stentor, and he's very pissed because you killed his adopted father. And I helped him, and I praised him throughout the entire thing, thinking I could, like, I didn't think he would rejoin the family, but I was thinking more that
manipulated
it would be, like,
you.
Kind of soft blow it, like, he continued to do his own thing in Sparta as a polemarch. But at the end of that sequence, he pretty much, he turns on you, and he does not care, like, his position in the military.
Nope.
And you battle him one-on-one, and then at the end of that battle, you win, of course. You can choose to kill him or walk away. And I walked away. I didn't kill him. And so then he just becomes a mercenary. He's Tentor the Fallen, and then I refused to kill him, because he came after me a few times when my, like, mercenary gauge would, like, fill up, my bounty would get high, and if it was him, I would just pay him off. I didn't kill him. So I pretty much just made him suffer eternally by keeping him alive, and not even though I had already defeated him. So he's like dishonored, out of the Spartan military, his father's dead, but he's still alive.
That's the golden, you know.
Which is kind of fucked.
That's true. But still, I mean, it's like, I get him being pissed because he's your adoptive father, but the same breath is like, he's fucked up what he did to you, yo.
Oh, it was super fucked up. That's why I killed him immediately. That's why I was like,
it's weird.
I don't really care so much, especially since he tells you you're
a piece of shit. You weren't even my kid.
Yeah, is what he, and which you didn't know.
No, you just thought he was legitimately your father, but apparently he was your stepfather. I don't know the how the mom was pregnant or what the situation was. But he was your adoptive father, and then Cassandra was his blood, which he sacrificed anyways.
Oh, yeah. All because of a prophecy, which was controlled by the cult of Cosmos.
Which is fake. Excuse me, because of the lineage of the mother.
Yeah, is essentially what it came down to, is like her line was incredibly powerful, and they were all what they call tainted ones in Odyssey, which means that they're part Isu and they're part human. So they're naturally stronger and faster, oftentimes more intelligent as well. And so...
Eagle vision.
Because of that...
They got...
They knew that one of them, if not both of them, so it was a kind of a blanket
would
thing.
Would be a downfall.
The downfall of Sparta, or the savior of Sparta.
Yeah, so obviously when the very beginning, you obviously get thrown off the cliff, or whomever you pick, one, somebody gets tossed off the cliff regardless.
Yeah, so they just swap places. One becomes the younger sibling, which is like the infant or baby who is tossed off at like the precipice of this prophecy. Mm-hmm. So they're the one thought to be the one that'll either be the savior or downfall of Sparta.
Yeah.
So the priests are gonna drop the infant off this cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the older sibling, which is the whatever protagonist you pick,
mm-hmm.
whether it can be Alexios or Cassandra,
mm-hmm.
Goes to like save
their sibling,
their younger sibling, and
yeah.
gets shoved off as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just crazy to think, like, I don't know.
Which I thought was a great opening to a game, to be honest. Like, that kind of, like, besides political strife, and it shows corruption
mm-hmm.
that ties into the main kind of villain, the Cult of Cosmos,
mm-hmm.
later in the game as you learn more information. And then it's very, like, familial and emotional on top of it. I thought
yeah.
that was a great intro.
There's definitely more than when you, got tongue-tied. More unique intros, for sure. But it's just insane. It's like, I don't know, as a mother myself, I guess it'd be completely different if I was in Spartan time, but I couldn't imagine you fucking tossing my toddler or baby off the fucking cliff. No, hell no.
Well, she was fighting too. The mother was, at least. It was the wolf of Sparta, the stepfather, that was just going along with it.
Yeah, that's true.
This is what the Oracle said. This is what we do.
Bye, y'all.
Yeah, the mother was freaking out.
Yeah.
And they even went and actually found the infant.
Because she was hurt.
And took the infant
mm-hmm.
to go be saved.
And then, of course, it's still corrupted by the
Cult of Cosmos.
Cosmos.
Yeah, the priest that she happened to take her to
told
her that she died.
Tormented fucking kids.
Yeah, tortured kids and then indoctrinated them into the Cult of Cosmos.
Yeah.
So that's what happens to the younger sibling. So, in my case, Cassandra, because I played as Alexios.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to sidestep this as well. Dude, Alexios has some fucking funny ass lines. Like,
he's got some really funny lines.
No, who said he's flat or says he's a bad character or say he's not as well written as Cassandra? Perhaps maybe because we didn't play Cassandra, we don't know. But in the same breath, he's got some funny ass shit to say.
Well, the lines would most likely be the same for both of them, but
mm-hmm.
his delivery is hilarious in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's like a perfect kind of blend of like compassionate, cocky,
and irritant.
Irritants. Like, and he delivers these lines kind of
great
between those, that kind of trifecta
yeah.
of like emotions very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes it a very kind of like dry, underlying sense of humor or sarcastic almost.
Well, yeah,
and he has
yeah.
sarcastic lines that you can pick as well that kind of add to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's wonderfully voice acted, and I think
and
that
he
did an amazing job.
He's Greece, y'all. He's Greek. He's
and I have that article up as well.
We need to talk about that. That's really irritating too.
Yeah. So this is via Forbes. I caught this the other day after I had finished the game.
That's why we kind of waited. Well, we didn't wait to the article, but we didn't know it was posted. But
exactly,
it came out. I'm like, oh, this is good context. But then we haven't done the podcast yet.
Exactly.
Where'd the dog go? Oh, there she is. She's laying down. She's being good.
Okay. So, I'll just read this paragraph. What's the problem with this sibling split? Mainly, it's the fact that despite almost identical scripts, and by the way, this is the Forbes article, and then the writer is Paul Tassi for their game section. Cassandra is a great character while Alexios ... isn't. I noticed that this during his lines in my Cassandra campaign, but I started up a new save as Alexios just to see what he was like and ... It really is just a
Who fucking uses ick?
Who?
Yeah. How old are you?
Yeah. It's like it writes for Forbes.
13? Ew.
It really is just a question of performance and voice work. Cassandra's Melissa Thini Mahut, I apologize if I butchered that because I'm sure I did.
Oh, you did.
Is stellar, while Alexios is Michael Antonkos, butchered that too, but it is a Greek last name, is just not on the same level. Though I don't mean to pick on him personally. He's too loud and over the top. His accent sounds like a parody of itself, even if it isn't. Which is like, that's that line right there. His accent sounds like a parody of itself, comma, even if it isn't. That's pretty much like, you're a fucktard. No insult intended. Like, you can't say that to somebody and be like, oh, I didn't mean it. And it's like, then you wouldn't have written it.
That's kind of like bullshit. That's kind of like someone saying, no offense. You're right.
That's what I mean. Somebody. Like, no offense. Like, you're a dumbass. Like, and it's like, well, excuse me? Like, of course you're going to take offense at that. That's exactly what that line is, with just a pretty much just a rearranging of certain prepositions and nouns, which is that's insulting. He just comes off like an overbearing weirdo. While Cassandra is tough, kind, and affable. And if you choose her, Odyssey essentially feels like the Wonder Woman game that DC never made.
Oh, wow.
This that line also, besides being incredibly insulting
to Wonder Woman.
So, Alexios' voice actor, Michael, is Greek.
Yep.
How is he parroting, like, himself or a Greek-sounding person or a Greek accent? He is Greek. Like, and if this is a American with poor sentence structure, like, 90s teen verbiage, which you just pointed out, writing about a Greek voice actor voicing a Greek character and saying it's a
parody. I don't know if you've ever seen Greek. Like, I've seen, obviously, Greek actors and just, like, TV happenstances of Greek restaurants and stuff. Like, that they sound like that.
Exactly. And yeah, it wasn't off at all. Also, essentially feels like Wonder Woman game that DC never made. DC doesn't make games. Warner Brothers does. They own DC. So don't be talking about video games if you're not even aware of developers and studios. Just throwing that out there. That's another nitpick.
We should call this What Makes Anthony Angry? Angry Time?
That kind of shit pisses me off. When you have people that are, for an outlet like Forbes, unusual to begin with, writing about video games to try to
video games. It's about the video games.
I don't know if the goal is just to have like your thumbprint on the pulse of the youth, like, and that's kind of like, you know, the avenue.
Use your $15 phrases.
The avenue that you want to head down. But Forbes is not a place I would go to for gaming information. I happened to run across this article because someone else had linked it. In a actual gaming forum, making the same complaints that I'm making now. And I didn't read those complaints until after I read the article, then I went back, and then I read the complaints, because I was like, that person posted this thinking that this was like an actually good article, a well-written article that had valid points, and no, they trashed it the same way that I am right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is one of my pet peeves when these kind of, not obscure outlets, but just like, it's not their beat. Cover something, and then obviously the writer that they assign to it, they know absolutely nothing about video games or the video game industry, because no video game journalist, like no self-respecting like video game journalist, would say like the video game that DC never made, because DC doesn't make video games. Like,
it's Warner Brothers. Even if you play Batman, it says Warner Brothers.
It's Warner Brothers, yes, because Warner Brothers.
I was like, it took me a moment to think, because I don't play as many video games, but I've seen you play Batman, it's always the Warner Brothers logo, and then bats fly around it.
Exactly, and so they have, Warner Brothers has video game studios that make games, not DC. DC is a specific publishing imprint that does comic books.
Wonder Woman's DC?
Wonder Woman is DC, yes.
Oh, I get things for that.
But, yeah, so I just find that whole article, like, incredibly, it's not well written.
Lambasted for not having a stinger at the end.
Yes.
Like every other DC fucking does. Or even Marvel. Marvel does too. Go ahead.
But, yeah, having somebody like that who doesn't know about the video game industry, and they're saying that a Greek voice actor wasn't Greek enough. Yeah. And you can even determine that from his name if you didn't want to do any further research. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we did more research for this podcast than that Forbes writer did for an opinion piece, which if you're going to validate an opinion, you're going to need evidence. Like, you should, especially
says the master debater
as a, yeah, you have evidence.
It's right here in your face.
Yeah. Boom, I've thought about it. That's how I take shit.
Kiss on your face, call that a play date.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
No, but, you know.
It got dark, yo.
Coming full circle, Alexios' voice work is great, and it fits the character.
I love it when he gets irritated. Like,
well, yeah, like you said, and he has so many different tones, like when he says Malakas, too.
Malakas. And like, Ollie's running around saying Malakas.
Yeah, Malakas.
It's fucking funny what it's all
like. It's like a universal like curse word, which is fantastic.
It
is.
Like, it works in all contexts because it literally is, right? Either a curse word calling someone stupid or, you know, you're a jackass or
whatever. Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, it can be used kind of interchangeably.
All wrapped up in one little bow.
But he delivers it in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. It's not like the same recording, or he only delivered that line one way.
Malakas.
At every Malakas, recording. Malakas, yeah, it's Malakas. Not like that at all. It's like, it's very apropos to the situation at hand. Like,
it's like, Malakas, or Malakas, you know?
Yeah, it's like where he's like immediately frustrated, or it's just like, or it's something not that big of a deal, and he's just like, oh, Malakas. Like, he's just put out about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it is delivered that way.
No, it's fucking amazing, and it's like, I didn't watch the very end of the game itself, but I watched a good portion of that game, and it's like, I don't know how many times we were just laughing our ass off. I like the whole Alexios's Icarus fighting a chicken.
Oh, that was a really funny side quest. So that was in the Tales of Greece portion, so that was added on with an update, and this awesome quest where you kind of go to like this really small
Pegasus. No, it's not.
Yeah, well, yeah. Real dark humor, but fantastically done.
The entire fucking game is dark.
But it's humorous.
There's never
in this part.
A happy moment. It's happy, and then someone dies.
Well, the family's reunited at the end.
Right, no, fuck off.
And then they join the ship.
Shh, your ship.
But yeah, that part was great. You go to this little like sub-region of Greece. It's not very big. There's like a seaside like village there, a town, and you have to like help this guy like prepare the town for an invasion by like bandits, but they're pirates. And so you do like these quests and stuff, and all these horrible things happen. And there has been supposedly another guy had come just before you, calling himself the Eagle Bearer, and had done all this stuff. And it was like, and Alexios the entire time is like, but I'm the Eagle Bearer. Like, he's like, and it's like, he's like, I have an eagle. Like, he's like super confused.
But then one person's like, I think you're saying, he's like,
he says, yeah,
have a chicken.
Yeah, he's like, but I'm the Eagle Bearer. I have an eagle. And then like Icarus flies down. And then she's like, yeah, now that you think about it, his eagle did look a lot like a chicken. You find out because it was a chicken.
Like how Icarus is fighting a chicken.
Yeah, and so you help, you do like this like three-prong kind of like quest to get to the end of it, and the gist is everything you try to do, because the other Eagle Bearer fucked things up so much, like bad things happen.
Yep.
So it's like Gal thinks that the other Eagle Bearer had found this special fruit that she can feed her horse that'll make it into a Pegasus. Alexios like kind of researches and finds all that stuff. He's like, your horse is not a Pegasus. Like, I'm not able to do this, but I got your horse back because it had been taken.
Yeah.
And she's like, but no, it's true. And she hops on her horse and rides off a cliff.
No.
Thinking that it'll fly. And then it's paid. Yeah, I feel bad. The only person I feel bad for this most
is
the horse.
I know, right? It's like that one side quest you did, that really sad one. You're trying to save the dude's horse, and then the bear came out of nowhere and killed the horse, and then you had to be honest with him that the horse is dead.
Yeah, that was sad. That's kind of one of those like emergent storylines.
Yeah, the fucking bear came out of nowhere. Didn't need to be there. It's not like you got attacked by bandits or something. The fucking bear did it.
Yeah, just mauled me. All the other quests of this, like Tales of Greece, like overarching quest, run about the same. Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to die. all because based on the lies of the fake eagle bear.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you confront the fake eagle bear, and he kind of looks like you, kind of not, but he's just like, he didn't really do anything. He mm-hmm. just likes fucking with people and making money, so he's pretending to be you. That's why he's doing it. And knew that you would show up and pretty much like make things worse because he already made things worse. And people would die and it would be kind of on you. And his Ikaros is a chicken. So on this clifftop, Ikaros battles the chicken and the chicken battles Ikaros and then you battle the fake eagle bear.
Dude.
And it was really funny.
That's like the best ever.
And that was added in a patch and as part of the Tales of Greece story.
So I want to say right now, I honestly feel like the DLC is such a better story. Than the actual story is.
It's 1,000 times better. Like, it's fantastic.
It's significantly well written, regardless of whom you pick. We're just going with Lexios because it's cool.
It is a lot. I found though, like overall narrative in the vanilla game to be decent and good. I think mm-hmm. it could have been tightened up a little bit.
Yeah, but it's easy.
But the writing in the DLC mm-hmm. is top notch.
Let's talk about how heartbreaking Renima when you were at Lexios.
Yeah, so the first DLC pack is
Hidden Blade.
It's like something of the Hidden Blade or Hidden Blade of something.
Yeah, you should know this.
I want to say it's like the Legend of the Hidden Blade, but that's like not right.
You failed this city.
Most likely, it's something or other. Hidden Blade. I know that much.
That does not help.
That's the Essence Creed.
Odyssey. Oh, they say.
Legacy of the First Blade. That's what it's called. No Hidden Blade at all.
Yeah,
the Legacy of the Hidden Blade is the first DLC. It's divided up into three parts.
That one's fucking good.
Yeah, they explain where the Hidden Blade itself comes from. Because in Origins, they don't. They just say it's ancient technology. Which is kind of funny.
Which I kind of
you know its origins.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's literally in its name. It's meant for the origins of Assassinos. I get for the build of Assassinos, but because Alexios doesn't do that.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, because it is a very like familiar kind of story.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of dealing with like the precursors of like the Order of Ancients and comes in contact with them. They've always been around a lot longer than the Brotherhood itself.
Yeah, and the origins it is the. Building of the Brotherhood, so that makes sense, but it's like really not going to put in the origins of Blade in the origins there.
Yeah, now in Origins, it's like it's just this is ancient technology kind of a thing,
but it came from really the grandfather, Nima's father,
and Nima's then, father, and
then Hibiodios is the son's grandfather,
but yeah, it explains that. It also brings Darius over, which is kind of cool, because he's essentially the first assassin, mm-hmm. really,
mm-hmm.
From Persia. And they bring, like, a new... It's similar to the Cult of Cosmos. They kind of work, like, alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Order of the Ancients,
mm-hmm.
which is the same order that...
Order of Cosmos,
fought in Origins. And then... Yeah, and I'll let you take this away, but it really is kind of an overarching like love story or family mm-hmm. story.
And I saw, because obviously I didn't see the very end. No, I did see the very ending. Never mind.
I tried to save like the story missions and like that content for you. So you
can see because I was like, working and all that crap. But I love seeing the growth of Alexios, him actually falling in love, not just, you know, banging whoever's walking.
Yeah, which you can. Yeah, you can like either sleep with like one gender or the other if you chose to, like nobody or everybody.
Yeah.
Up to that point, I had slept with everybody. Any opportunity I had.
This sounds like you.
It was like the one like smooth talking Greek. I slept with him like 6 times throughout the campaign.
Dude, the smooth talking Greek is hilarious. Anyways, yeah, Alexios.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I love that character. That
was
man. Him and Socrates were brilliant.
It's great. But the funny part is like, you know, obviously you do all these quests, and then you have Darius, and then you have Nima, and you actually fell in love with Nima, because she's kind of very similar, except for she had her father kind of upbringing her family's murder, they're after them, and they actually find a little villa to raise a family, and Nima, and eventually they have Hibiodios, their son.
Yep.
And, of course, you know, it's all hunky-dory-dandy, and then, of course, and this is obviously written as such when she has her good luck charm, the little cow her mom made her. I think it's a cow. It might have been a horse. It was a cow.
Some creature. It was four-legged creature. Yeah. Larger than a dog.
Wooden creature that her mom made her to protect her. As soon as she threw it in the goddamn river, I'm like, oh, shit's gonna go south, son.
Yeah, definitely foreshadowing.
Yeah, obviously. And then, of course, shit goes south. And then I think it's just for me. I was irritated that they wrote that Nima got killed. And for her to be trained as an assassin, not kill anybody when she's protecting her son.
Yeah, especially in the third chapter, they show exactly what happens when mm-hmm. you talk to one of the Cult of Cosmos, or not Cult of Cosmos, one of the Order of Ancient members. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she didn't really like
fight at all.
Yeah. I mean, they make it sound like she did, but they didn't show any of it, which I thought was kind of weird.
You figured you'd show her at least killing one or two of the men. Like, she's literally trained to be
an assassin. And you found no bodies there, because that's, like, the beginning of mm-hmm. the third chapter.
Yeah, and then, of course, she gets killed, and you find out Hippidios is still alive, and then, of course, that leads into you going to find him.
Yeah, it's pretty much like Hippidios' father and grandfather, mm-hmm. maternal grandfather, are bloodlusty, and they're going to get him back no matter what.
Well, I mean, I would too. Yeah. You killed my wife and fucking
kidnapped there is his daughter, yeah, and dies there, and then they kidnapped the grandson and the son, mm-hmm. which is crazy.
No, it's a really good story, and I love how that's built. It's sad. And of course, just for us playing the game, you don't sleep with anyone else after Nima.
I didn't. No. Not a single time.
No, because the main storyline...
There was a few of them where it was like, you can romance. You can even romance the main villain at the end of the game. Hercules' wife.
Oh, yeah.
There's romance options there. And I was like, okay, first of all, even without Nima, this is fucked up. But it comes up where you can board with her. So I don't know how that turns out, but I did not try. It was after I had already played
and Nima, then you got attacked, and Nima died, there's tears in the eyes, it's just a horrible situation.
Yeah, and so I was like, eh.
Well, then the only thing that minusculely irritated me, and of course I'm probably going to get lambasted for this, is when Darius takes Hippidios to Egypt to raise him.
Yeah.
And obviously he's fucking generations past that to Origins. Yeah, it's like
400 years later to Origins, about.
You know, and it was a kind of a good, like, you know, time lapse thing, you know, telling him how much he loves his son, and him, he may not be there.
Yeah.
And of course, that was heartbreaking in its own right, but, you know, Darius and him both made a good decision. The fact that it was freaking the wife.
Oh, yeah, it was Bayek's wife. It wasn't Bayek.
Which makes no fucking sense.
And it was, I feel like that was because she was written as part Greek already, mm-hmm. that's how they attached that, and Bayek necessarily wasn't, even though it would have been fine retconning.
Yeah, Bayek's origins weren't necessarily talked about who his parents were.
Yeah, they had talked about who his ancestors were 400 years prior. No, they just said his family had been in Siwa for ages.
Which they had been by then.
And
he had been
the Magi, and that was it.
And they could have easily retconned it. I just feel like for that storyline, they should have done it that way. Especially since the son got killed, then how does Alexios' story, like, bloodline keep going?
Exactly. And I have a theory about this whole thing, too.
Oh, God, is it going to be the Seven Dwarfs again?
it might have been during the same... I've been trying to come up with artwork and a name for that, too, because that's gone on
Casper. Oh, God.
I think it's going to be... I need a time, because this is going to be tangential. I'm not going to explain the Seven Dwarfs stuff, because people can listen to that recording. Because we recorded
the whole thing. You're coming out of work and you ask me to go, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? What are you on?
Exactly.
Did you get a mustache? No. Oh, what'd you do?
So, John and I, yeah, we did a whole Seven Dwarfs thing, and...
This just sounds horrible out of context, by the way.
It's supposed to.
Okay.
He's supposed to.
We did a Seven
Dwarfs
thing. I think
it's going to be a separate thing, though.
It's a weekend. It's kind of rough.
And I'm just going to call it... So there's two articles. Mm-hmm. There's one that John read that really pissed him off.
Okay.
Where it was like... I think it was one of the directors of The Mandalorian, or mm-hmm. one of the writers of The Mandalorian, and one of the cartoon ones, Star Wars ones. Mm-hmm. And it pretty much just said that, like Star Wars fans bitching about, like, the narratives and stuff and continuity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He pretty much just said, like, people need to, like, quit bitching about this. Like, mm-hmm. Canon doesn't matter. It's just a movie. Hmm. Even though that's his livelihood is making sure the canon and continuity of a series that he's a part of functions. And is kind of a, like a slap in the face to like fans, because it's like he's just pretty much saying, yeah, all the hard work and all the money that I make doing this, like, really don't matter, and I'm not really putting in the work, yeah. And I don't care. So that really pissed John off. So, like, canon doesn't matter. That was kind of the thing. The one that really...
The device has gone south.
Exactly. The one that really pissed me off was the article that we started the podcast with that said 2/3 of players chose the wrong character.
He's like, fuck you.
Yeah, you picked the wrong character. I was like, a game that gives you choice is going to say that one of the choices is wrong. So you really didn't give me a choice.
Reminds
like,
me of The Good Place with the one black guy who can't make a choice. Is the right choice? Just choose!
Exactly. Just deal with the consequences of whatever choice you make. So I think I'm going to call the Seven Doors bits, and I'm sure there will be more hypotheticals like that. It'll just... Canon doesn't matter, and you chose the wrong character. And then I got to do artwork for it.
Oh, God.
And then we'll post in a separate thing on CastBox that has this
wonderful story. This wonderful. Two dumbasses came up with.
You know what? Megan was fascinated by it and was going to do her own research and come to her own conclusions. And I expected you to really be on board with it, but no, I got none of from you.
So why have you been mad at me all week?
No. God. That's a small irritant.
Oh my God. I'm going to sell you on eBay. I'm going for the lowest bid. $1.50? I'll take a penny. No. Damn it.
I'm totally gonna call it that.
Did you give your wife a headache?
No, I can do your own podcast by yourself.
No one wanna listen to me by myself. Shit, what were we talking about again? I've been working. It may have been slow, but I still worked and I'm tired, okay? Fucking y'all annoying and it's just sitting there all day doing nothing.
We were talking about the legacy of the first blade.
There it is.
All right. We were talking about the ending specifically.
Squish your face. Yeah, no.
How you were upset because Bayek's wife was the descendant of Alexios.
Not Bayek.
Not Bayek. And then I had a theory about this.
You know Peter DeLorean is Isu?
I can picture it.
She's snoring right now.
So my theory about this whole thing is...
Oh, yeah, your theory. We went off from Seven Dwarf Path.
Exactly. It attached. It did. So when, before Odyssey ever even came out, there was rumors, there had been nothing announced about it, nobody knew like plot details or setting or location or anything. There hadn't been a hard announcement. Mm-hmm. There was rumors that it was going to be a direct sequel to Origins, and the main character was going to be Bayek's wife.
Yeah.
And that you were going to be in Greece.
Okay.
Obviously, those have been since Devant, because Odyssey came out, and it's Alexios and Cassandra. It is in Greece, but it's set 400 years prior.
Yeah.
It's even further back in the time when the Origins is. That knowledge, in conjunction with the director saying that most people have picked the wrong character, and that Cassandra should have been the main character. Mm-hmm. Leads me to believe that early rough drafts, like writing wise, of Odyssey was Bayek's wife, and it was a direct sequel to Origins, and that those leaks were actually substantiated. They were probably true at one point. Not a finalized product by any means.
Yeah.
But spitballing rough drafts of the narrative of Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And then they already had probably salvaged a lot of the character writing.
Yeah.
Or even some of the dialogue, specifically that Bayek's wife would have used, and that's for why Cassandra's character was written so much more strongly and pushed so much more than Alexios, and then why the director said that most people have picked the wrong one, because it probably really was just a mapping of Cassandra over the top of a character that was already written that was supposed to be Bayek's wife.
Dude, and then
that's what I think.
Very fair theory, and but my theory is Bayek's wife was boring as shit.
Oh, she was awful. She was probably the worst part about that game.
Yeah. So
she was written really poorly.
It makes me really not want to play as Cassandra.
Her decision making didn't make sense. Her lack of character growth was obvious. and Spyx was very prominent. Like he had a great character arc, and he changed and became more aware and grew as a character over time because of the events that he was living through and found new purpose. And she was very like flat.
True. Just so you know, Pitador sniffed my mic, so you might hear some peaky snorts in there.
Probably.
She's trying to eat it because it's got the fuzzy on it.
But I think that's what happened there.
That's true. I can see that. So besides that, obviously, we know how that one ends. Is it only two DLCs or three DLC?
Just two. I mean, if you count Tales of Greece 3, but we kind of touched like on the vanilla story. We touched on one of the Tales from Greece.
I feel like the Tales of Greece are what they wanted to do on the main story, just not enough time, so they did it as DLC.
Yeah, and it was just a free patch, but it really fleshes everything out. You get personal stories with a lot of the main characters.
Yeah, exactly. So like I said, they want
Brasius, Herodotus, Barnabas, like all these kind of staple characters for Alexios' story.
Yeah,
need a little more insight.
Yeah, no, like I said,
they're really well written and really cool.
They probably wanted the main story to run out of time or whatever situation, so they had it as DLC, which is nice that they did that. But what I like is Tales of Atlantis.
Yeah, it was The Fate of Atlantis.
We were already fucking that one up already, so. By the way. Yes,
The Fate of Atlantis.
I'm going to toss out there, I fucking hate the main timeline, the current timeline,
Lisa? Oh, Layla,
yeah. Hater.
Layla's awful.
She is horrible. Horrible, 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 and stop it.
And just a horrible human being.
Like
on top of it. Like
they even said in the Atlantis, I'm jumping ship here, obviously we'll circle back to it, where they said, you're not the keeper. You done fucked up. And then...
Yeah, you're not the heir of memories. Kind of.
And then, huge spoiler alert, killed Alexios for no fucking reason.
Yeah, and so, yeah.
Now, you fill in context.
In The Fate of Atlantis, it turns out that, like, Alexios's, like, job or destiny is to carry a precursor or Isu staff that keeps him immortal.
Sometimes he holds it.
And he is supposed to hold that for the Heir of Memories. Well, the Heir of Memories is the present-day character featured in Origins and Odyssey, Layla. So he has to wield that staff and stay alive to, like, pass it to her for 2,400 years.
Yep.
Yeah, so it makes him alive, actually, during every single other Assassin's Creed game.
Which is legit.
Yeah, which is crazy. But there's a really weird scene that doesn't quite make sense because he kind of fills her in. He's still alive. You see him on the screen. You're like, oh, shit. Like, that's insane. Yeah, he's wearing a suit. And he passes the staff to her. He lives for like a few minutes longer.
Because he has the will.
Kind of does his like prayer to like Mother Earth and then dies. And that's it. And she's just kind of like, she holds him briefly and then it's like, oh, okay, well, back in the Animus to experience what he experienced. And I was like,
he's right there! You could
have asked him!
Yes, and more. It's like, we're going to put a pin in this and talk 20 minutes real quick.
Also, could have taken his DNA and relived through all the 2,400 years that he lived.
So many plot holes with that. And we're gonna
take the dude out for a cup of coffee and ask him some questions.
Seriously. And then the other thing that's really irritating about is the very end, obviously we're gonna dive into Alexios' part.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But with with Layla, she kills her best friend, the doctor.
Yes.
She finds out because she jumped ship from Templar's Assassins.
Yeah.
That because she essentially went rogue, they were worried about her, the Templars were, and weren't trying to fucking kill her.
That was in Origins, yep.
And then, and same with the Odyssey, it's like they were just trying to see where she was, and she like...
And her next assignment was going to be...
Alexios.
Alexios and finding Atlantis.
Exactly. So it's like...
Which is what she wanted to do and why she jumped ship.
And so it's like, because she was in
I just pointed out to her that she's the only one that has killed a whole bunch of people and that the Templars haven't. Like, exactly. In relation to her, at least.
Yeah, it's like, they haven't been doing anything to her.
Yeah.
They've just been trying to find her because they were worried about her. They didn't know she'd gone rogue. They haven't communicated with her.
Exactly, yeah.
Because she wasn't listening. She wasn't listening to her doctor friend who told her, You're losing it.
Yeah.
And then she kills her fucking best friend, by the way.
Yeah, she kills her friend. Kind of shrugs that off, too.
Yeah.
And it's very much like, I want to go back into the Animus.
And the Isu's like, what the fuck did you do?
Yeah, the Isu that's kind of like the driving force as far as like the Isu plot line throughout Odyssey. Yeah, she rematerializes and calls her out. Mm-hmm. Like the Heir of Memories would not do this. Like you're supposed to like be peaceful, benevolent, not kill people.
And then of course she threatens to have the main guy come to her, and the way she fucks him up is horrible.
Yeah, instead of just killing him, it's kind of torturous. She spears him with the staff, and that's kind of the true ending of the game as far as the modern day plot is concerned. They fight, you beat his ass with the staff.
Horribly,
and then he's still alive, though, and she raises the staff over him, which has a point at its end, and paralyzes him.
Yep.
Yeah, she severs his spinal cord.
Yep.
With the staff, and leaves him there.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's like, instead of even being like, showing mercy, it's like, well, this is the enemy, they attacked me, mm-hmm. I killed them in self-defense. She leaves him there to suffer and be paralyzed. Instead. Because that's the better course of action. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Also, if you ignore the modern day bookends to the fate of Atlantis, when you're playing as Alexios and going into these simulations, which lead you to Atlantis, mm-hmm. and like how it was, those parts are great.
They're fucking fantastic, and that's what like, it irritates me so much.
Compartmentalized, and there's three chapters in the fate of Atlantis. They're really well done. The worlds are really well done. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more focus on, and the focus kind of drives down. So it's like an upside down pyramid almost, mm-hmm. where it's like Elysium starts out a little broader scope. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more difficult to navigate. There's more to do a little bit.
More
to the water.
Yeah.
But then you get to Hades and it's a little bit smaller and focused though. Dude, which I appreciate. And then Atlantis is
very,
very
focused. But the Elysium is meh. That one's like the weaker of the story lines.
Yeah, so the context here is the Isu has set up these simulations in the old thrones of Atlantis. Mm-hmm. And then you have to play as Alexios as he goes through these simulations so he can master the power of the staff so he can hold it for 2400 years.
Yeah.
But he doesn't start in Atlantis. The first simulation is Elysium, mm-hmm. like you said. That one was the softest of them.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. Persephone and Hermes and, like, the Isu you deal with or the gods
yeah,
you deal with.
And Hecatus.
And it's, you know, Kate or whatever.
Hecatus.
Yeah. And she was the most interesting by far.
Yeah.
Persephone was just kind of eh. Hermes I liked, but he was very blinded by love.
Yeah, Persephone was very flat, though, in my opinion.
She was flat. That area is very gorgeous and very mm-hmm. reminiscent of some of the DLC and Origins.
Yeah, it's very,
it's
very pretty.
Really pretty, and the level design is really unique. Mm-hmm. Like, the forts are done really well, and, like, the cities are on all these kind of rising, almost like the Devil's Towers. Mm-hmm. Like, they're on these, like, cliff tops and mm-hmm. stuff with these sheer cliffs all the way down to, like, this meadow.
Yeah.
And all these rivers and stuff. It's very green, very colorful. That's probably the best part about it, though, is, like, the world is pretty.
That's it.
Yeah, and Adonis is kind of funny. You deal with mm-hmm. him a little bit. But otherwise...
Nothing.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I mean, it was a good, like, prologue or intro.
Yeah, it was a good intro for sure.
Second chapter, though, is
the
underworld.
God,
Hades. Hades is
so
great.
Fucking hilarious. I love it when he gets mad at it, and he's like, excuse me, hot-headedness runs in my blood, and apologizes for it.
Yeah.
And then he ruffles Alexios'
yeah.
hair.
He treats Alexios just like a little kid, and like ruffles his
oh,
hair.
Oh, figure out the little staff for you, little buddy. Gorgeous, too, for how dark it is.
Yeah, that one is obviously very grim, because it's the underworld. There's a lot of really poignant kind of side quests mm-hmm. that you have to do, where it's like you're dealing with like an old cult member that you killed who's mm-hmm. in the underworld. You deal with like your best friend, Brasidas, who had died in the main campaign mm-hmm. To regain his honor. And you deal with Phoebe,
yeah.
who had died again, and kind of put her to rest as well and reunited her with her parents
in
Elysium. Mm-hmm. So the quest lines were all really poignant. Mm-hmm. Compared to Elysium's, I really enjoyed them. I thought they were great.
Oh, yeah.
And each chapter, by the way, too, does add new, mechanics and abilities, which was good. They were obviously kind of experimenting with it a little bit.
I thought that was
which
really
is
cool, though.
A prime kind of playground to do that in.
Oh, especially DLC. Stuff
yeah.
with new shit and see how it goes, and people will obviously get feedback.
if it worked or not.
Yeah, and then you can obviously finesse it or what needs to be adjusted. And
you can wash your hands of the stuff that didn't work, and then you can just kind of fine-tune what will.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think, I mean, Hades honestly was my favorite one. I didn't really see you play that whole story. I liked how him and then Poseidon were betting on you.
Yeah, there's just a few other scenes, like, throughout where, like, he shows up during some of the Charon-like missions.
Mm-hmm.
And then, depending on what you do with the quest lines with the people that you knew in, like, real life,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Poseidon and Hades, who are brothers, are, like, betting on the outcome. So they're, like, exchanging these coins back and forth. Kind of in silence. They'll have, like, maybe a little bit of dialogue, but not a ton.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just kind of really funny. Kind of adds to the atmosphere, and also their characters as well.
I think the funnier part is, like, with Hades, and where he's like, you will bow to me. And then, like, he was like, I didn't bow to your wife, he's like, I'm going to bow to you.
And then Hades, and he actually does curse, so, like, this is verbatim. He's like, you will fucking bow. He gets pissed again like he did in the beginning. And it's like, he obviously did not want you to say his wife's name on top of it. And then you refused Hades. And so he's like, yeah, he says, you will fucking bow. But Alexios, his line right before is great. When he says, I didn't bow to your wife, I'm not going to bow to you. Yeah, it's like, exactly. Oh, shit.
That's what I mean.
This, like, dude ruffled your hair in the beginning of this shit. Like, you're going to go
like
him?
A good, like, foot taller than you, dude.
Yeah. He's crazy.
We had a dog, so.
Yeah, because he kills servers in the beginning.
We feel bad.
Pisses him off.
Yeah, why feel bad? We need
to do it. Yeah, defeated him, too. He'll be big. Servers will be big.
Anyways, and then of course it goes to Atlantis, and that one's honestly my favorite of the three. I mean, Hades is cool, but
Atlantis is really cool.
Is, like you said, the point of the pyramid, the kind of getting to
the climax.
The climax, obviously, it does have that shit show of the fucking bookends of the modern day, but then it does. If you just, you know, exemplify those aren't existence. The story itself is great.
It really is. It's like, you don't see a lot of Poseidon, you see him at the beginning and the end.
Mm-hmm.
Very reasonable. Pretty much the only reasonable Isu you come across.
Yep.
Or god. Yeah, and again, area is absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really uniquely designed. The level design is really cool. They're pretty much like three concentric rings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the middle is Poseidon's palace. The outer ring is, like, more, like, residential.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most outer ring.
Like farming and stuff.
Yeah, and then the forts are there, and it attaches to, obviously, tens of thousands of years prior, some of the Greek isles are also attached to it. Like, you can actually get to land, and there's some places that you can go to.
Yeah.
Very beautiful, really kind of what you would think
Atlantis
would look
like.
Very blue, very watery. Yeah. Again, they kind of mess with verticality a little bit.
Which is
like
cool.
They did Elysium, so that was interesting.
I think, like, the coolest thing is, obviously, you know of Juno and Desmond's storyline and how that was a nice tie-in. And you finally meet her husband.
Yeah, who is very prominent in Assassin's Creed 4 as the Sage, as he's, like, reincarnated.
Yep. So you finally get to meet him, which is cool. And then I love Poseidon's, like you said, his last frame. Fucking electric blue eyes, and then
he quickly defeats
Juno and her husband,
and Juno and her very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole gist of Atlantis is Poseidon runs it. He has it on cycles. If it is proven that the cycle is like unworthy, then they start over.
Yep.
So they start a new cycle and they try to improve on what didn't work from the last cycle to make it as close to like a utopia over time as possible.
Yeah.
One of the decrees that Poseidon has had for like many cycles is that you don't experiment on humans.
Because
one of the big issues is that humans and Isu are not living together harmoniously.
Yeah.
They're always at each other's throats. They used to think that they're better than the humans because they created them.
Mm-hmm.
The humans are human. And so it's like they are intelligent. They want to work together. They want to, you know, but they don't want to be treated like slaves.
Yeah.
And so there's this kind of tug of war. Besides trying to fix it, but it hasn't really been successful. But you find Aida and get to meet him, the sage, and he's been experimenting on humans, which goes against Poseidon's decree of no experimentation on humans.
Yep.
Juno, of course, comes into play because she's the one feeding pretty much Aida's ideas. And then the two of them confront Poseidon, and Poseidon gets all pissed off with his trident and quickly defeats them and makes them bow.
Yep.
While you have to go fight the Hecatores.
What's the phrase he says? You bow to me and the Dicker.
Oh, the Dacostas.
Dacostas.
Yeah, which is Alexios, mm-hmm. which is funny because they said they wouldn't like bow to humans, and he's half human.
Yeah.
And it's also then obviously a play on Hades' lines mm-hmm. at the end of his chapter, which I thought was really funny because he was like, "You will fucking bow to me." And then Alexios had said, well, I didn't bow to your wife, I won't bow to you, mm-hmm. like prior. And then at the end, he's making Isu bow to him.
Yep.
Like, because of Poseidon.
Yeah.
So, Poseidon fights.
Full circle, bitches.
Juno and Ida defeats them fairly quickly. That's within the cutscene. And mm-hmm. then you have to go fight the Hectorians.
The 100 heads and 100 hands.
Yes.
Arms, whatever.
Which, that battle and the Hades boss battle at the end of his chapter were the best battles in the entire game and all of the DLC by far. They were really unique. They were challenging. Made you use mm-hmm. a lot of your different abilities, and you definitely be like a higher level character.
Yeah. I know, and I thought that was pretty freaking awesome that I was able to do that.
Yeah, and it was really cool. And then they explain a lot of stuff. So besides like the Sage and Juno kind of tie-in, mm-hmm. One of like John's main complaints was throughout the Assassin's Creed Odyssey mm-hmm. during like the vanilla story, you can battle these mythological creatures, the Cyclops, Medusa, the Minotaur, mm-hmm. and
have no backstory.
Yeah, John was like, "Well, that's weird. It's like this is kind of grounded in reality. It's just using the precursor race and like science and mm-hmm. more science fiction mm-hmm. than fantasy." It yeah. seems out of place. Well, they explain that the human experiments that Aida had done. Had created the Minotaur mm-hmm. and Cyclops and all these creatures, and they had just kind of lived in oblivion and chaos for the next 77,000 years until you get to Odyssey's storyline and when Alexios defeats them.
Yep.
Before reliving these memories. So, and then yeah, he casts Final Judgment on Atlantis. Mm-hmm. Him and Poseidon both, and they sink Atlantis for the last time, yep. and it's never redone.
Nope.
But it was really interesting. It was really cool. That does bookend itself to Layla paralyzing the Templar and taking the staff and just kind of leaving. And that wraps up the game.
Yeah, that's a dumbass ending.
Yeah. But Atlantis does explain a lot of stuff that happened in the main story, which mm-hmm. is really cool. And then the main Isu that like created the simulation, she... explains that they're not simulations per se, they're her memories.
Yeah.
So Layla is playing or is reliving Alexios, and Alexios is reliving this her memories.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool.
I thought that was legit.
Very Inception, Animus Inception.
Yeah, it's Peter Lorre Inception. Inception. Obsession?
Imp-session? Why are you obsessed with imps?
Oh, don't Disney know Peter Lorre.
But yeah, I mean, that kind of puts a pin in it. Like, that is all of Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
No, it is. And honestly, the game itself without the DLC is a good game. Obviously, it has its minor issues. But it makes it more of a full story with the DLC, for sure. And it's worth picking up the DLC, even if you get it later.
Yeah, I would say that if you had issues with the main campaign... but you still finished it and mm-hmm. enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe the mechanics were kind of the driving force for you. Or yeah. you're just a really huge Assassin's Creed fan and played all of them. Mm-hmm. I'd recommend playing the DLC.
Yeah.
If you thought that writing was awful and you don't really like the way that Assassin's Creed games are going, don't waste your money.
Yeah, seriously. Like,
obviously, they are going to lean more into this style of game.
Why are you going to talk about John like that? That's rude.
Because he's not going to play the DLC. Mm. That's his exact opinion. But I told him about it, so he knows. He knows the deets.
He knows the deets.
Yep.
Now they all know the deets. An hour later, you know the deets.
Exactly.
Peter Dorian, but with a little zipper on her tail.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll do the same thing with Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Oh, yeah. Which I'm stoked to be getting now. Well, whenever it comes out. Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll find out. We will find out. But, you know, that'll be more of a rigid... kind of structure. We'll, mm-hmm. we'll do like first impressions after we beat the main campaign, and then a postmortem like this.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, right, kind sir. Any housekeeping?
No, I don't think there's any housekeeping. I think we're golden. I mean, I have the idea about the Death's Not canon, and you chose the wrong character.
You chose the wrong character.
Give me a headache. Then you can hear about the Seven Dwarfs.
Yes. Go listen to him and John talk about Seven Dwarfs for 3 hours.
It wasn't that long. It was a long time. But there was, yeah, sure, there was hypotheticals that were not recorded before.
God, you're hypothetical.
I will leave you with this. If the Seven Dwarfs were in an all-out arena battle, who would survive?
I'm not answering it.
And chime in. Tell me who you think would be number one dwarf.
You're an idiot.
Dobby has retards, right?
Ah, well, that scene said, folks, as always, follow the bear. I'm Mario Schultz.
I'm Anthony Schultz.
Bye.
Peace.
Hey there, guys. This is Anthony Schultz, one half of the duo for Rage Quit. I just wanted to spend a minute or two, at most, talking about Ariel and I's other endeavors or where you can follow her and I if you're a fan of this podcast. So I'm most prolific on Twitter as far as social media is concerned. I share more kind of gut reaction or like private experiences and opinions there. I'm at Anthony R. Schultz. Pretty easy to remember, just my name. And if you'd be so inclined, you can give me a follow, and I also drop Rage Quit links there every week and other things that Ariel and I are both working on. AS Inquisitor also streams, which is the production company that produces Rage Quit, essentially myself at the moment. And I stream 5 days a week. I'm a variety streamer, so I do a little bit of everything. Hopefully, there's something there that you would really enjoy, even if it's just one day a week. I take every Thursday and Friday off, and you can follow and or subscribe at twitch.tv/ASInquisitor. All these links that I'm mentioning will be in the description box below, and I will reiterate. Also, AS Inquisitor has a YouTube channel. So if you're not listening to this podcast via YouTube, if you're using your preferred podcast provider, this podcast does make its way to YouTube. We will eventually be recording not only our voices, but also ourselves when we do the podcast. We're just working on some equipment issues right now. But we also have past streams that I've done for AS Inquisitor that have a little bit more kind of polish or pizzazz to them. They're divided up into like better bite-sized chunks for complete game playthroughs or Let's Plays. There's also a lot of unique content there. I record things throughout the week as I play games, just kind of funny moments or maybe even like personal achievements, things of that nature. And so you can search for AS Inquisitor on YouTube, and again, the link will be in the description below. But those are my three kind of primary platforms that you can find me on. So that's Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. Ariel actually has her own YouTube channel called Painting with LM Schultz. She's a very talented painter. She has her fine arts degree and enjoys painting for cathartic reasons, as well as to improve on her like technical prowess. So she started her own YouTube channel to improve on her techniques, as well as show people kind of some basics or things that you can do painting wise. There's also some other kind of crafty do-it-yourself kind of ideas and videos on there as well that pertain a little bit more personally to her and I. Because they usually involve our family. You know, it's a family project that she's working on. For example, she did our son's Halloween costume. And so she walked through how she constructed and created, you know, the costume and how you could do something similar for your kiddos at home. And then finally, you can follow Ariel on Twitter as well. She is primarily on Twitter, just like myself. We don't really indulge in too many other social media platforms, save for maybe Instagram. I don't think we're as active on there. Ariel might be, more so than myself. But you can follow her at @merhobbit and give her a follow as well. And it's my lovely co-host and beautiful wife, Ariel. But anyways, I just wanted to stop in and kind of throw some links your way. And if you were curious about what AS Inquisitor was doing and what how Rage Quit kind of fit into that ecosystem, there it is. Yeah, got all the links for you. If you're interested in any one of those, all of those links are going to be in the description box below, and they're going to be in every podcast episode now. So I'm not sure if they're entirely there right now, but I'm going to be doing a fresh write-up and make sure and have all of those included for you. So just click a link or copy and paste and head on over if any of those strike your fancy. But anyways, thanks for enjoying the show. Really appreciate it. We'll be back next week for more rage quittiness. And as always, follow the bear. And have a good evening, guys.